This is John Rappaport, and this is the Solari Report, October 2014, Spiritual Warfare. I know that some of you are very interested in this subject, and I have been interested in it myself for a very long time. So I have many varied comments about it. But I want to start off with this. As some of you know, I've been writing extensively about the so-called Ebola pandemic and the propaganda campaign that is well underway to convince everybody on the planet that this is the most dire threat ever seen to humankind. I started with this back in 1987 when I was writing my first book, AIDS, Inc., when it was the same story about HIV. This is going to decimate the planet. I was there with West Nile, bird flu, SARS, the so-called smallpox terrorist threat, swine flu, Ebola. And in every case, the public is treated to the idea that this is it. This is it. You know, this is the big one. People forget. They say, well, this one is different. I mean, in terms of the threat. Well, the publicity and the propaganda about the threat is very, very similar. If you were to go back and find articles from these different periods of time about these different so-called epidemics, you would find that the language is quite similar. The fear campaign is quite similar. The propaganda is quite similar. And yet each time a certain number of people say, this is different. This one is different. They've been saying that all along, you see. So let's take, you know, John Q. Jones. He's been saying that since 1988 or 1985. This one is different. Okay, next one. This one is different. No. This one is really different. Oh, this one, my God. This one is, yeah, I know about the other, but this one is not like the other. This one is different. Same guy. Short memory. Doesn't make the connections. And why this is a form of spiritual warfare is because it penetrates to the core of certain, shall we call them, instincts or tendencies that people have in terms of imagery and pictures that they have of dire threats, of what they will buy in the great market of fear. There is something in most people that is willing to buy what is being sold because, not because they really examine the facts up close and personal and look at it logically and see the contradictions and the hoaxes and so forth and so on. No, because somewhere inside there is a certain kind of leaning tendency, quote, instinct toward accepting this kind of propaganda. And that sort of instinct says, yes, you know, I've always known that there was going to be something like this, you know, and it's real to the person. And I've always, it's as if I've been waiting for this to happen. And I knew it was going to happen. And now here it is. And I'm reading the articles and the papers and I'm watching TV and I see it. It's playing out exactly what I knew just below the level of my conscious mind was really going to happen. Wow, here it is. You see, it's kind of like a negative revelation. Very hard to deny, very hard to reject, very hard to put on the shelf. Oh, this is it. Because you see, it fits. You see? It feels like a psychic connection. It feels very much like a psychic connection. Or like a synchronicity that came out of nowhere. You know, I couldn't put a shape exactly to the image, but I had a feeling about it. I knew there was going to be an event, a catastrophic event. And now that I see the Ebola story, this is it. This had to be what I was waiting for and thinking about and perhaps fearing, but here it is, you see, it's a revelation. Well, that's talk about selling. I mean, ding, ding, ding on the cash register. That's it, baby. You know, that's as solid as a steel bolt in a bridge. That connection. Well, that's a form of spiritual warfare. And when you think about it, this notion of this is it, this is the big one, it goes back all the way to the beginning of human history on this planet. I mean, you can see these stories played out time and time and time and time again. Over and over. The stories are different. They're told by different people. You can go back into very ancient societies and see that, for example, it was the priest class telling these stories. Whereas now it's the, quote, scientists and the bureaucrats and the government officials and so on. The doctor says. But it's the same connection. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is in fact a form of spiritual warfare, whether or not it's recognized. It's there. It's there. Because it feels spiritual. It feels inevitable. It feels cosmic. It feels like the event which will determine fate. You know, when you're talking about things like that, you're getting up into the spiritual realm or down into the spiritual realm, whichever way you want to look at it. It affects people in that way. And many people can't shake it. Just can't shake it. They can only wait and let the officials continue to tell the story from beginning to end. And then they say, okay, I guess we didn't all die. But there will be another big one. There will be another, this is it. And that one, we will all die, or hundreds of millions of us will, whatever it is. This has been a form of spiritual warfare since the beginning of time. And it's good to recognize that. In fact, I think it's essential to recognize that. I'll give you an extreme exaggeration, which everybody will laugh at, because it is, in a way, pretty funny. But it goes to the heart of what's happening now with Ebola. Back in the 1920s or 30s, somewhere in the Midwest, there was a sect with a leader, a woman, who told people that the world was about to end and that a mothership was coming, and that it would take everybody who was a member of the sect off planet and they would avoid the catastrophe. And she even set a date. And as the date approached, the idea was that the members had to get rid of everything they had. If they owned a house, they had to sell it. If they were renting, they had to leave it. They had to pack up their things and travel light. And, you know, I mean, this was serious stuff. And so on the appointed day, they all gathered in a house, in a room. The leader was meditating in another room. And she had set a time, an exact time when the ship was going to arrive. And of course, this was shortly before the catastrophe that was going to envelop planet Earth and destroy everybody and so on and so forth. And, you know, so all this was, I mean, extremely serious stuff to the people in the sect. And I believe it was 6 p.m. when the ship was supposed to arrive. And everybody's sitting there waiting, 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 and 6 o'clock comes and nothing happens. And they're waiting for the leader. And the leader comes in and says, I've just gotten word that the ship is going to be arriving a little bit late, but stay there and all will be well. And she departs into the other room, closes the door. More time goes by. No ship. And finally, the leader reemerges and says, look, I've just had a fantastic communication from the mothership. The catastrophe on Earth has been averted. There is no need for us to leave the planet at this time. All is well. We've been saved. And here's everybody in the room, you know, their bags packed, the suitcases between their knees, sold their houses, their possessions, and everything. And now this is the message. Wow. Follow up. The sect continues to proselytize to gain new members and expands as never before. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Now we say, and you know, I'm right there with you, how crazy was that? But the same thing is happening now, you know, and the same thing happened with swine flu. I believe I've run that down chapter and verse for you on previous Solari reports, but I've also written about it extensively, and I won't go into the gory details, but that was a dud, a hoax. It was exposed as a hoax. I was one of the people that exposed it as a hoax, a complete, I mean, an utter hoax in terms of the numbers of cases and the people dying and the whole shooting match. And as I said at the time, this was hyped to the sky. In retrospect, many people don't remember that, so they say, yeah, but that really wasn't so, you know, threatening. Oh, yes, it was. Oh, yes, the predictions, the dire predictions, like a wave engulfing the planet. Level 6 pandemic, the highest category of danger declared by the World Health Organization in the spring of 2009. Oh, yeah. But then you see the mothership never came. never came. And now that we have the next big one, Ebola, more people are on board than ever before. Same actors are making the same pronouncements. In fact, during the swine flu, quote, epidemic, the CDC was saying several months in that there were tens of thousands of cases in America. Tens of thousands. Now they're saying three, four, or whatever it is with Ebola, and people are flipping out. So the sect has successfully proselytized in the wake of the dud swine flu to become much larger than before. The same story. Same story. And as far as the, you know, the hoax, the fraud, in the science of it all, I've been writing many articles about that at No More Fake News, and I'm not going to try to run any of that down. You can just go there and read the whole story. Okay, so spiritual warfare. One aspect of spiritual warfare is the ability for propaganda masters and specialists to make a connection with people somewhere in their consciousness where a, quote, instinct lives that is anticipating, you see, what the propaganda specialists are going to say, so that when they say it, it's a fait accompli. It's, I knew this was going to happen. Yes. If that ain't spiritual warfare, I don't know what is. Because it is an attempt to block off all other areas of consciousness. Consciousness, spiritual consciousness, and mind, rational mind, in favor of this one area where the lock and the key work, this, quote, instinct, this self-fulfilling prophecy. That is most definitely a form of spiritual warfare. Now, see how I can put this best. I talk about the reality manufacturing company. That's my metaphor for the people who make reality for us, who invent it. The mural of reality. I've spoken about this several times on Salieri Reports. Now, of course, there are certain aspects of this reality that they create, which with a little study, a little application, a little effort, many, many, many intelligent people can see through. Oh, yeah, why did I think that, that was real? That's just ridiculous. You know, and this over here, likewise, I mean, that, you know, ha, 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 you see. But there are certain aspects of what the reality manufacturing company is doing where it's not so easy to say, oh, sure, that's ridiculous. There are many people who, for example, in this, quote, Ebola crisis would find it extremely difficult to be able to see through to what the reality manufacturing company is doing. So nobody said it was going to be easy all the way across the board to expose the reality manufacturing company and all the reality that they're creating. In each one of us, there are certain areas where we are vulnerable, shall I say, to the reality of the manufacturing company. And I find that this, the virus, is one of the biggest, one of the deepest in, or the most deeply rooted in many people. Okay, so I want to move on to another proposition about spiritual warfare. Are there forces somewhere in the cosmos, in the ether, in another dimension other than the physical dimension, who are against us, against those of us who have good motives and want to see a good outcome for Earth? Are there these forces, and are they playing their game, their long-term game? Are they trying to obstruct our efforts? Are they trying to confuse us? Are they trying to weaken us and render us unable to continue to do what we do? Does this explain why some of us feel powerless or confused or weak or unable to come up with solutions to problems, etc., 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 etc.? A very big question. And I want to start by pointing this out. Again, you can go historically into many societies on Earth and find that at the highest level of power, the answer to that question was yes. That was the answer that was given to the masses. Oh, indeed, there are these forces. And here is what they are. Here are their names. Here is what they do. And this is what you can do to emerge victorious. And of course, what you must do is completely in line with what the leaders want you to do. That's what they want you to do. You know? Hey, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this, you got to follow our orders, and if you do, everything's going to turn out all right, and if you don't, hoo-hoo, baby, you're doomed. You've had it. No way out. Can't escape. You will be swallowed up for all eternity. Many times this answer has been given. Many different forms, many different structures, many different societies, many different leaders. So there is a history of this, and it ain't good. It's not good. Not good at all. Why? Because of the people who were fronting for this whole notion. And I find that in modern times, the same is the case. Anytime somebody tells me that the answer to this question about, you know, are there invisible forces that are acting against us to thwart us and so on and so forth in a condition of spiritual warfare, anytime somebody tells me this and begins to say, and this is what the force is, this is the name, this is who it is, this is what it is, that's coming in from this other dimension. We're not talking about David Rockefeller here, okay? We're talking about something on a whole, you know, other level. Anytime somebody tells me that, I, you know, look with a very suspicious eye at what's going on here. Who benefits from telling this story? What are they trying to do here? And inevitably, there is a solution that is offered. You know, and the solution somehow, gee whiz, how did this happen, benefits the person who is telling me the story. Wow, incredible. Now, I understand that there are very legitimate problems and legitimate solutions and legitimate people talking about them. This is not just an effort to say that anybody who poses a problem and then offers a solution has to be a con man. Quite to the contrary. I'm talking about this whole idea of the invisible, really, you see, because that's what it is. It's not something, well, if you want to check out who the evil forces are, just go down to the XYZ mortgage company, room 653, and you can see them and judge for yourself. You know, oh, that guy, yeah, Mr. Smith, yeah, I've been wondering about him. No, it's not like that. So this whole area is just rife with obfuscation and so forth from the A to Z. However, that doesn't deny the possibility that such spiritual warfare is indeed happening. It's not a complete rejection of the concept, but it is a cautionary note for sure, if you look back through history. So, what does a person do? Suppose a person gets it in his head or her head that, yes, there is this thing called spiritual warfare. It is invisible. I don't know where it's coming from exactly. I can't really pinpoint it. But I have to somehow conceive of it in order to try to understand it, you know, as a first step to conceive of it. How's a person going to do that? And the answer to that is quite likely with his imagination. He's going to imagine it, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it does, what's happening, who are the bad guys, who are the evil forces, and so forth, and so on and so forth. Now, the downside of that, unfortunately, is that when you imagine something, not only does it become real to you, A, but B, then you have a tough time getting rid of it if you didn't realize that you imagined it yourself in the first place. In fact, some of the most powerful elements that act against us are the ones that we create ourselves or imagine ourselves. So, another cautionary note here. If a person is more or less convinced that this thing called spiritual warfare exists, and yet, well, you know, is floundering around, you know, it's not under my desk, it's not in the closet, it's not out in the hedge there, and it's got to be in another dimension, so how can I even conceive of what it is? I better try. And then they imagine it. They are setting themselves up for a rough ride, a rocky ride. Yeah. That's the way things work. If you don't know, you imagine. Well, I can't see the Ebola virus. You know, I see this worm in a photograph. But it's much too small. I can't see it. Where is it? I've got to conceive of this somehow myself so that I, you know, I have parameters here. I have a way of, you know, what is it, you see, so that I can then go on and try to assess the potential risk and the threat and what it means and so on and so forth. And so you get millions of people who are imagining it. And then they buy what they imagined, and now they're there with it, you know. And then now it's like a piece of, you know, hardware or a little briefcase they carry around with them, and every once in a while they look and say, oh, you know, gee, whew, Maybe I don't want that to happen. I better, you know, let's go down to the hazmat store. And, hey, kiddies, we're going to buy some clothes today. Let's go down to the hazmat store. Yeah, they've got kids' outfits. They've got very, very small, and they've got small, medium, large, and extra large for daddy. Yep, he's been eating a lot of pizza and McDonald's, and so he's going to have to get the extra large hazmat suit. And, yep, we're going to look good. Yeah, we're going to look good. That's right. And, you know, at first, when we go out of the house, there may be some people scoffing at us, but don't pay attention to them because, you know, I've in my suitcase here that I carry around with me all the time, I look in there and I go, oh, my goodness, we got to avoid that. And we are, and we'll stand up for that. You know, and if we have to dig a bunker under the house, thinking seriously about doing that as well and putting several rooms in there. And on the way back from the hazmat store, let's stop at the supermarket and maybe we better take the truck. Because I want to get about 1,000 cans of food and some water and for the bunker. If you don't know, you imagine. And if you imagine, then there you are, you know, with what you imagined. Then we have another aspect, and that is, I'll say it as just a kind of catch-all phrase. A person is dissatisfied with his life, okay? For whatever reason. It could be what we would say is a petty reason, or it could be a very good reason. In other words, that person is, on some significant level, at odds with himself or herself. It happens. I'm not accomplishing everything I want to. What do I do now? I have big dreams. How can I make them come true? You know, that would be on a major level. And then there are other things like, you know, I can't find the right color for my nails when I go to the, you know, the nail salon. You know, that's a whole other thing. Persons at odds himself. So, a person can resolve that, and that isn't necessarily easy to do. In other words, it takes time, it takes work, it takes thought, it takes, you know, people like to say, well, just set your priorities. Sure, why not? If your priorities are all superficial. But when they get to be profound and you find that some priorities are at odds with others in a very serious way, it's not just, you know, a snap of the fingers. And that can put a person at odds with himself. So faced with the choice of working through that and resolving it, really resolving it to the point where a person now ascends to having a tremendous overall vision of what he intends to do, what he intends to create, the future that he intends to create, either by himself or with others, et cetera, you see, and implementing that and actually doing it, come hell or high water, the prospect of all of that can be daunting, indeed, for a person who's at odds with himself on a profound level. And perhaps that person would prefer, okay, and here's where the rubber meets the road, perhaps that person would prefer to say, I'm engaged in a struggle with cosmic forces that are invisible, in a spiritual war that is very, very, very difficult and very mysterious and very confusing. And I need to learn a great deal more about that in order to be able to not be at odds with myself anymore. Now, the person wouldn't say it that way, but that's what's happening. The substitution, in other words, of a picture for, well, the unwillingness to go through whatever a person has to go through in order to resolve being at odds with himself and to obtain and find and discover and invent a profound vision of the future that he wants and then to actually make it happen. I don't think so. No, I don't, you know, I don't really think I want to go that way. Instead, what I want to do is to say that I'm engaged in a spiritual war with invisible cosmic forces. It's very confusing and mysterious, and I don't want to know what to do. And I have to really dig into that and explore it and spend the next 5, 10, 15 years figuring out who the players are and how it's affecting my psyche and what it's doing to me. And then maybe I'll have a better understanding of how I can, you know, have a good life and to get what I want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That happens, okay? That happens. People do that. They do it all the time. Everybody? No. Some people? Yes. Many people? Yes. They do that all the time. It's kind of like, well, you want to eat, I don't know, lobster. This is what I truly and truly and truly and truly want. But in order, you know, to get the kind of lobster that I want, because I know lobsters, believe me. And I know the little ones and the big ones and the bad ones and the good ones. And I know the great lobsters. And you can only get the great lobsters, you know, in this remote bay off of northeastern Maine. And it's very difficult to get to. And it's not right there on the beach. And you have to take a boat out and the waves are high and it's very cold. And says, and I live in Argentina, you know. So I can either go through everything I have to go through to get to my lobster, or I can say that I can't leave Argentina because I'm engaged in a form of cosmic warfare with invisible forces, and I have to understand what that's all about. It happens. It really does happen. So there is that. There is that. And the recognition, which is not easy to come by, on the part of a person that he is making a substitution of one thing for another, as I've described, is not easy to come by either. But it can be done if indeed that is what somebody is doing. Okay. So, with all of that that I've spoken about so far under our belts, so to speak, what else is left on the subject of spiritual warfare? Well, there is one other thing. There are some people who are very sure about the particular battle that they are waging personally, and they will tell you about it at great length if you want to hear the story. But quite often, when it comes down to finding out what that person is actually doing to win the war that they say they're engaged in, seemingly with knowledge of, you know, great knowledge of who they're up against, you don't see so much of that. You don't really see, okay, so if you're in a war, I mean, you know, let's see your battle plan. And how many pieces of the plan have you executed? All right, so that's kind of a corollary, you might say, or an addendum to the substitution aspect that I was just talking about. And now, if we could exclude all of what I've been talking about so far and put it behind us and say, okay, we understand all of that, but now when we look at the subject of spiritual warfare elsewhere, what is it that we could be looking at? What would be left? Is there anything left? Is there anything left? I'm not talking about physical warfare here. Let's not get that confused. We're not talking about, you know, the cops coming to your house and saying that, you know, you're growing vegetables, so you have to go down the station and answer questions. We're not talking about the IRS. We're not talking about, you know, environmental, industrial chemicals coming to your front door. We're not talking about any of that. We're talking about this concept of spiritual warfare. What would be left? What would we be looking at? And I would say the following. And this is not, you know, an answer like Illuminati or Bilderberg. I would say that if a person can put behind him everything we've been talking about so far and say, no, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that when I'm talking about spiritual warfare. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm not subject to any of that. I'm not falling for any of that. Okay. One, I would say we're now in a very clear atmosphere here. That person is in a very clear atmosphere. And two, that person would probably decide on one of two answers. A, I am not engaged in any form of spiritual warfare. I am inventing, imagining, creating the reality that I want, either by myself or with others. And that's it. And that is spiritual. Because if that ain't spiritual, it's not big enough. The vision is not big enough. It's not encompassing enough. And obviously by spiritual, I don't just mean organized religion. I don't just mean what this society believes and that church believes. I'm talking about the dimension of the individual who is not a biological machine. I'm talking about, in fact, you know, you. As the ancient Hindus said when they had their heads on straight and they contradict themselves many times, the individual is immortal, inhabits a physical form. The physical form is not the individual. And I would say that any vision of what one wants most profoundly is going to be more than physical. And more than physical equals spiritual. Yes, it will include physical, sure. I mean, we're here, aren't we? You know, this is pretty physical as far as I know. I'm looking at the walls and the floor and the lamp, the ceiling and the fence and the tree. Yeah, it's pretty physical, sure. It involves the physical, but it isn't only physical. So that person having emerged and saying, we can put all that behind me. I'm not involved. That's not what I'm doing. That's, you know, I'm not falling for any of that. Would be in a very clear space and would say, A, I'm not engaged in any form of spiritual warfare. I'm creating reality. That's it. Thank you very much. Or that person would say, yes, I am engaged in spiritual warfare. And I can tell you about it if you're interested, up to you. And that person would have a lucid notion of what they were involved in. and would be able to talk about it in terms that meant something. And you would also be able to say, well, what have you done in this war that you're in? What's worked for you? And what else do you plan to do? And the answers you would get would make sense. Now, if you think I'm avoiding something by characterizing it this way, well, I thought he was going to tell us what spiritual warfare actually is, who the players are, what they look like, where they live. Is it in dimension 1274-A or is it in 43B, sub-basement 12? No. Why not? Because ultimately, what I'm talking about here, as I really am every time I do one of these reports, is the individual. And what the individual perceives, creates, imagines, brings to fruition, can create, can imagine, can bring to fruition beyond the scope and power of what he is able to now. What the individual can know for himself. The individual is the gateway into understanding whether or not he's involved in spiritual warfare once these other matters that I have been discussing are put behind him, and he is not subject to any of that. No substitutions, no cop-outs, no buying in, you know, reflexive, automatic, no, none of that automatic buying of something that seems to be appealing to some, quote, instinct where he knew that something horrendous was going to happen, and then here it is because, you know, somebody said it was here, somebody in official position, none of that. All that is, once all that is gone and you're just looking at that individual that has that degree of clarity, that individual is going to be able to say with clarity whether, yes, spiritual warfare I'm engaged in, or no, I'm not. Does that mean that you have to accept what that person says? No, of course not. But to me, that's the best gauge. That's the best way of knowing, rather than painting a picture and saying this applies to everybody. Now, in case anybody is thinking about this, you know, there's been a great deal of literature written about electronic harassment and mind control through microwaves and feeding brain waves back into the brain and messages and all of that kind of thing. Yes, yes, yes. Mind control. Talked about some of that in previous solar reports. When we're talking about spiritual warfare, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that at all. I mean, sure, you can document that certain people have been harassed. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, but that's on an energy level. And energy is physical. I mean, if we're going to get into that, I could talk for 16 hours about pharmaceutical drugs and the spiritual warfare of pharmaceutical drugs. Absolutely. No question about it. But what I'm talking about here is something beyond any of that. And that is the clarified individual is the best gauge for himself or herself as to whether or not that is happening. Now, there is this question, and I've been asked this many times, if we look at some of the elite power players on the planet and we analyze and understand, you know, the horrendous things that they are doing, evil on many fronts, then the question arises, well, how can anybody do this? How can a person do this? There must be some spiritual force, negative spiritual force, that is either operating through them, or they are tapping into, or they have aligned themselves with, they have dedicated themselves to, something along these lines, in order for them to be capable of being the agents of destruction. So why, how is it that these people can do what they do? And I think that's, you know, I don't think, because I'm looking at the time here, that's a subject for an entirely different report. But what I can say is, let's suppose that we take one of these elite players and we say, well, look, he belongs to this cult, and they have these rituals and ceremonies, and they deliver themselves over to some demonic force and so on and so forth and so on. Okay, sure. But then the question still arises, are they actually delivering themselves over to a force, or are they inventing the force and then delivering themselves over to it? Is this ritual, in other words, something that has been created as a form of conjuring, or are they actually walking through a door into the room where, you know, demonic doofus lives, who's really there? And I won't say in the final analysis, but I will say in an important analysis, it doesn't matter. Because either way, they end up in the same place. People can do things to themselves that are incredibly transformative on a positive and negative angle. And so if I erected an altar in my study and decorated with all kinds of weird stuff and came in every day and prostrated myself before it and, you know, involved in all kinds of chanting and singing and making statements and surrendering myself to the great force of the goop-a-doo or whatever, and this is all very negative in terms of, you know, evil, and I really believed in it and I committed myself to it, I could end up doing quite fantastic things. In other words, it's transformation by individual creation. Yeah, there is that side for those people who do that. I ain't one of them. And in fact, because I know the audience I'm talking to, each one of us, to some degree and on some level, is engaged in a process whereby we imagine and create in our interior space the kind of thing that we really want, the kind of thing that we know is good, the kind of thing that has good outcomes. And by doing that, there is a kind of feedback that begins and continues that permits us to become more than we thought we were. Not more than we are, because in a sense, that potential is always there, but more than we thought we were. Now, that isn't exactly conjuring. That's not building an altar with candles and grinning skulls and all that crap. But the creative nucleus is there. So as far as the bad guys go, and where they're getting their power from, these kinds of questions. It would take a further discussion, a quite long discussion, to begin to pick apart the question of, well, are they just inventing all this themselves, or is there actually somebody in room 265, you know, Beelzebub 147 or whatever you want to call them, that they are surrendering themselves to? And different people have different ideas about that. I say the outcome is the same. Either way. And for the overwhelming majority of people who want to believe and have a very strong, you know, impetus to believe that there really is that room 147 and that demonic dude is there, you see, who really, oh man, it's got to be there, yeah, you know, feel a compulsion talking about now, not an assessment, but a compulsion to say, no, this isn't just something that they're conjuring. Is he really there? Really there? Okay, that person is making a grand substitution in his life and is engaged in a form of spiritual warfare that is self-invented as a substitution for actually finding what it is that he most truly and profoundly desires and going out and actually working to make it happen in the world. And with that, we're good. I say that there is no limit to what you can invent. No limit to what you can create. No limit to what you can imagine. No limit to the amount of energy that you can bring and invent to that work. And that when you do that, ultimately, in the long run, no force anywhere is able to stop you. Talk to you next time on the Solari Report. Thanks for listening. Thank you.